Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The Four Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The Four Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, KEYS. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. And download your free copy.
We are not our history. We are the stories we tell ourselves. And you'll find that you talk to your parents about some of the things that wounded you as a child. You know, you say, you know, mom, when you said this to me back in the day, or remember this situation that happened, and your very selective memory, because we can only store so many memories from our lives. And it's usually the ones that are super amazing or super painful. That tends to be what we have the capacity for, right? And so you revisit one of those situations and say, I remember when you told me blah, blah, blah. And then your parents go, what? That's like either that barely happened, or they tell you the context of it, or they tell you what came before or came after and reframe it for you. And you go, what? I always took it as X, or I just remember the Y, or I, whatever. And again, you're selectively choosing the pieces of those stories that you have chosen to take on. And they continue to be the narrative that plays out in your head.
I'm Srini Rao, and this is the Unmistakable Creative Podcast, where you get a window into the stories and insights of the most innovative and creative minds who've started movements, built thriving businesses, written best-selling books, and created insanely interesting art. For more, check out our 500-episode archive at unmistakablecreative.com. Doing creative work can be kind of lonely, and that's why we built the Unmistakable Listener Tribe. The Tribe is a community for professionals to connect and support each other. Everything is designed to help you grow your business and share what's working and what isn't. And that's true whether you're a business owner or an artist. You'll get access to feedback, live conversations with guests, and so much more. By joining the Tribe, you become part of a community of creators who all support each other, and it's completely free. Hopefully I'll see you there. Visit unmistakablecreative.com/tribe to join. Again, that's unmistakablecreative.com/tribe. Leslie, I'm actually thrilled to be able to do this in two parts. I think that it says a whole hell of a lot to me about how much you have packed into this book. One of the things that you say before you start to introduce us to the things that block swagger is that if you start to believe your own hype without having the actual chops to back it up, you not only start making bad decisions, you also literally brainwash yourself into believing you're better than you are, which leads to less of a desire to improve. And I appreciate the fact that you put that in the book, because I feel like there's so many people who believe in their own hype with nothing to back it up. Why do you think that people even get away with that? I mean, it seems like there's a lot of that, particularly in the online world.
I think there's actually an expectation to do that. People believe that the fake it till you make it thing is what ultimately brings them success. You know, if you can convince people that you're amazing before you feel amazing, you have a better chance of becoming amazing. But I don't really believe that. I think that you want to experience self-belief, but that's different than confidence. You know, you can only experience true confidence as a result of true competence. Only when you've done something enough times that you become unshakable in that, do you exude what that thing that everyone aspires to, that confidence. You know, people can come for you and you go, ah, I'm all good. It's fine. You can think what you want to think, but I know where I am in my journey. The problem with that, though, is that whenever you get to that place of confidence, it's such a freaking relief. You know, you go, oh my God, I finally know what's going on. Oh my God. And you don't want to move outside of that so quickly. And I think the difference between people who really accomplish great things in their lives is that they don't get too comfortable in the place of confidence, that they're really okay with going back into that, you know, getting punted out of confidence and going back into that confidence building thing. So when we you know, convince ourselves that confidence is everything, then we actually limit our ability to grow. And self-belief is very different. Self-belief is a choice. And to me, what self-belief is, it's just that unshakable kind of, you know, that center that tells you that you can take a step off the cliff into the unknown or into what appears to be the drop or the nothing, and that you're not going to die. You know, there things might happen to you. You might experience a bunch of things and it might not go as planned, but you're not going to die. And I think that lack of self-belief is what stops people from going into the unknown. So there's these, all these different elements in my mind, from my perspective. So I think if you believe your own hype too much, then you don't get into that confidence building. And if you don't believe in yourself enough, then you don't take a step off the cliff. So there's kind of a sweet spot there. It's like hustle and humility mixed together.
Yeah. No, I love that, because I think that one of the things that I've become hyper aware of over the last year or so, you know, based on the conversations I've had with people here on the show and my own reading, is the role that cognitive biases play in the assumptions that we make and the decisions that we make, which is why I frequently tell anybody I'm teaching to consider the possibility that everything I'm telling them is bullshit, because it might be for them. And so I wonder, you know, when it comes to this whole idea of, you know, believing your own hype, like, why do people ignore context so much? You know, like, I'll give you an example just to frame it. So like, you look at an online course or something like that, right? And you'll see that, oh, this person got this result, so if I just follow them and do exactly as they did, I will get that same result too. You know, like, I had a friend who has been a guest here before. She sent me, I think, 10 different websites from 10 of her clients. And I put them all up to next to each other. And I said, I'm going to pass on all of these guests because I have no idea what the fuck any of these people do. And it sounds like they all do the same thing.
I think that we, you know, our lack of our context or lack of context. So let's take context first. We will compare ourselves to that which we find impressive. And just because we find it impressive doesn't make it by definition impressive. That's just perspective. You know, I remember my mother, my amazing mother, when I was a little kid watching the news, and she said to me, Leslie, you realize that there are other news crews taking a different perspective on this. And the ones that you're seeing are showing you only what they want you to see. So you're not seeing what's real. You're just seeing what they want you to see. And it doesn't make it true and it doesn't make it right. So you have to be able to form your own opinions about these things and imagine that you're seeing a much bigger picture than you're being shown. And I think that in our social, you know, social oriented world, we developed this incredibly curated view of everything, and we don't want to think about what is true and real beyond that. And so, you know, we're going to like what we like. We're going to gravitate towards what we gravitate towards, and we're going to believe what we want to believe. I think it takes a really strong mind, you know, in this today's environment to go, yeah, okay, but, right? Because that's the opposite of what that curated social media thing is trying to do. They're saying, no, just see only this, see a collection of this, a palette of this, a reinforcement of this. Don't think about what I might look like off camera or what this situation might be besides this. Just accept what I'm telling you. And I think we've become super myopic as a result.
Yeah. I mean, I think that sort of myopia tends to lead to a lot of delusional optimism.
Delusional everything. Delusional pessimism too. I mean, I think it works, you know, in many ways. I think that we have a far less sense of what's true and what's real. We've seen that. We understand that in the media, that what we're seeing now, where we used to really believe that what we were seeing was real, we now know for a fact that what we're seeing is not necessarily real, which is terrifying for people because they want the concrete. They want that which they can trust.
Wow. Well, let's get into the first swagger blocker, which is persona. And you say the first Vigor blocker separating the real you from the world is persona. So many of us develop a conscious demarcation between who we really are and what we reveal to the world, particularly in the context of our professional lives. We do this because we've been conditioned to believe that there's a way we're supposed to show up if we want to succeed. But the truth is, having a work persona does not help. It just hides our uniqueness and shrouds our value. And you may be the one person who can finally answer this damn question for me. because I think that when you're a public figure, it comes with some very unique challenges. So, you know, perfect example, I was on a reality TV show. People said a lot of, you know, not so nice things about me during that. And, you know, the person they matched me up with, everybody else had plenty of nice things to say. But one of the things that I was very mindful of was the fact that I am a public figure. I have a body of work, and everything that I say and do in such a large forum is a reflection on every single person in my life, my investors, my literary agents, my speaking agents. And so I think that this is one of those that I really, you know, is one of the ones I thought a lot about this when I thought about sort of, you know, what's involved in the psychology of building an audience. When I met Glenn Beck, I wrote an article titled Person versus Persona and the Media Mask, because I think inevitably I am a different person behind the microphone than I am with my roommates and closest friends, because a lot of the things that I say to them would basically be career-ending PR crisis in the making. So where's that boundary between, you know, being genuine about this and being a jackass?
I don't think, you know, a lot of people get down on the concept of authenticity because they say it's an excuse to be an asshole. Now you could just be unfiltered, uncensored and say, oh, I'm just being authentic. It's just who I am. It's just the real me. That is not what swagger is all about. And I think also that, you know, yes, I guess I might say different things to my best friends, you know, in the context of conversations than I would say in service of the swagger message, for example. Yeah. But if they were conflicting, then I'm full of shit. I might say them differently or express them differently. I might swear more, or I might be more specific or whatever. But if I'm changing my context, if I'm full of shit about what I believe in, you know, I think it's about, I think people mistake professionalism with credibility. And that's where I think it gets very messy, because when I know, and it's a very long and rocky road, because very often when we step into our professional environments at the beginning of our careers, we start with that mask of persona. We walk, talk, dress, behave, fucking business buzzwords and acronyms and all the shit that we think that is going to gain us entry into this new tribe that we've entered into, you know? And then it just continues from there. And we tell ourselves that the reason that we are experiencing success or we're ascending is because we're doing that. You know, we don't think about the spaces in between where our humanity is shining through. We think about, well, I must be succeeding because I'm doing this right. I'm playing this game, this role, you know, correctly. And so it just goes on from there. So what I always say to everybody is you gotta be who you are from the jump. Like from the time that you go and you interview for a job, for example, you gotta let them see who you are. So if they do want you, you can go, oh, phew, okay. So they want me for who I am. And yes, there may be people in my work environment who are trapped in that persona paradigm who aren't gonna like it, because my realness holds up a mirror to their lack of realness and the fact that they're very trapped and they don't know how to escape it. So the more authentic and the more real I am, and the more people will gravitate towards me as a result, because we know that we fall in love with people for whom what you see is what you get, because we feel safe with them. You know, we don't feel like there's something, you know, there's something hiding behind that's gonna like, you know. Those are the people that we love and respect in our world, but for so many people, they've gotten so disconnected from it. They don't know how to get back there, and they feel like it's going to be this big radical shift. And for me, professionalism is being respectful of other people. That's fucking cost of entry. Don't be an asshole. You know, it's doing your work to the best of your ability. It's trying to elevate the collective and not just yourself. It's about taking responsibility when you screw up. And it's about, you know, it's about being a part of something bigger than you and considering the goals of the collective, you know, to the best of your ability. To me, that's what being professional is. It's not about wearing a certain kind of shirt or speaking a certain kind of way. But I mean, if you have a client meeting and you believe that your client is going to be offended if you swear a blue streak, then it's not good for the collective for you to swear a blue streak. But when you're in a meeting with your colleagues and you're a swearer, swear your fucking ass off. It's who you are. It's not going to hurt anybody. Nobody's ears are going to fall off or bleed. And I think that you have to learn to make choices. And if what you say and do is out of alignment with what you think and feel, you know you're experiencing what I call the swagger gap, that you're full of shit and you're trapped in persona somehow.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss. There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
As creators, we're always on the move. Whether it's a live podcast event, a pop-up shop, or a workshop, we're constantly interacting with community, and that's where Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe comes in. Imagine this. You're at a live event, a listener loves your merch, or a participant wants to sign up for your course on the spot. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, you can accept their payments right there and then, right from your iPhone, so there's no extra hardware or no delays. Total game changer. It's not just for creators. Any business owner can do this. It's about making transactions smoother and much more personal, growing your business in your way. We've been using Stripe for our products and courses for a long time, and now with Tap to Pay on iPhone, you can take your business to the next level too. So visit stripe.com/tapiphone to learn more. Remember, folks, with Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, your business is always at your fingertips.
It's funny you say that because there are two experiences that come to mind for me when you say that. The first was the first and probably the last time I ever went to give a talk at Pepperdine. My dad saw it. He said, "You use way too many swear words." And part of it was I think I'd been watching these Gary Vaynerchuk speeches, and I was like, "Wait a minute, like this actually doesn't serve the message at all." Yeah. And that was a pretty profound realization for me. I was like, okay, I'm not Gary Vee. I shouldn't be swearing just for the sake of swearing. The other one is job interviews. And I love that you brought this up because, I have been fired from every job I've ever had. And now that you've said this, it makes a lot of sense because I was really good at interviewing because I could put on that mask and I could go in and I could basically present the image of who they wanted me to be to get the job. And of course, I could never keep the job because that wasn't me. And I remember thinking if I'd ever had the opportunity to do it again, I had one last interview for a real job sometime in 2011. And it's funny because I wrote about this in my book where there was a guy there basically said, you know, when we say, you know, 8 o'clock, we don't mean 8:15. And I think if I had been honest, I would have just put the interview to the end right there and said, you know what, guys, I think I would hate working with all of you. So I think let's just save each other some time and, you know, call it a day. Like, clearly I'm not a good fit for you, but I didn't. And what's funny is the woman who was hiring for the job got fired. The person they hired got fired, you know, and then this other guy was just a lifelong person who just followed rules.
Yeah. I mean, I understand how badly we want to fit into the tribe because that's primal, right? That's if we don't fit into the tribe, we're the first one that gets eaten, you know, in the event of a famine kind of thing. So we want to fit in and we feel so proud of ourselves when you go, yes, I have been accepted. I have been approved of. But if you're being accepted and approved of for being someone other than you're not, what is the fucking point? What is the point? You know, we cannot be for everyone. When we are for everyone, we become like this artificial, vanilla, bland nothing. And you know, yeah, it doesn't make waves. And yeah, you think you're making other people's lives easier and that you're going to experience some kind of security as a result. But when you are screaming on the inside and going, I can't, I'm trapped in this, you know, vanilla world, when I'm a double, triple fucking, you know, mochaccino with a twist of lemon and some cayenne pepper sprinkled on top, it will not last. And I would rather be respected and accepted and loved and approved of by a few for who I really am than accepted and loved by everybody for who I'm not, because it's not real. And we're so starving for approval that we'll do anything to get it. It's heartbreaking. Yeah. It's heartbreaking because we don't know how to self-validate. We don't know how to internally validate. That's not anything that anybody teaches us how to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm so glad you brought that up because I've been kind of like writing about this idea, what I call a creative MBA, which is kind of what I want to start to form based on just looking at curriculums in both MFA and MBA programs. So there's this huge knowledge gap, which is, you know, largely around the subject that you're talking about, because you can learn how to do all these different things. You can read all these business books, but if you don't address the very things you're talking about, you're kind of building it on a house of cards.
Yeah. Oh, listen, 100%. That is what inspired this book in the first place. Because when I launched Combustion, which is in my training company in 2008, I mean, it was called something else initially, but the company that eventually became Combustion. And I was training skills for which I considered myself to be relatively expert. That was what made Combustion different. It was subject matter experts who became trainers in order to share that knowledge and make people's work lives better the very next day. That was my whole thing, and doing it in a very irreverent, very soulful, very human-centric kind of way. But what I discovered, it didn't matter where I went in the world. It didn't matter the level that, you know, I was working with CEOs down. It didn't matter the culture. It didn't matter the company, that, you know, at their core, people didn't feel like they were good enough to succeed. They didn't feel like they could reveal who they really were and still experience the success that they were dreaming of. So all of these skills that I was teaching them, storytelling, presentation skills, creativity, you know, leadership, it was like built on the most incredibly shaky foundation, because how could they actually internalize these skills and own them if they weren't internalizing and owning themselves? You know what I mean? It was yet another layer that they were putting on the outset. Okay, presentation skills. Okay, I got to look like I'm all over it. I got to look like I'm super confident. I got to look. I was like, no, we got to learn what it means to feel that. What can you tap into that is proof for you so that you can experience that sense of true confidence? So that when someone questions you in the moment, you don't fall off your center. You don't freak out. You don't crumble, or you don't get mad, or all of those things that become the shit show when we're having to get up in front of people, you know. And when I realized that, and I spent all of my time trying to break people down when I had them in front of me, that was what my training became. It was like this deconstructing of their psyches to show them that if they pull out who they really are, even for a moment, and let other people in that training experience see them and experience the feedback from that, that they'd start to see the proof of concept. They'd start to go, wait a second. Wouldn't you like that? That was good. Everyone was like, yeah, that was so much better. That was so amazing. That idea, that thought, that the way that you carried yourself, the way that you told that story, you were like a different person. And I'm like, no. That was actually you. That was the real you. Do you understand how much of you are leaving off the table? You know? And if you tapped into everything that you were, how, you know, what a difference this would make. So that's why I went, skills training is great, but it is not going to work unless people believe that they are worthy of embracing this new information and using it in a way that only they can. And then bring it back out into the world in an incredibly powerful place, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. A conversation that comes to mind for me is my friend Erica Lermark, who has also been a guest here. I remember she would tell me, she said, you know what? She said, when I talk to you offline, she said, you're incredibly opinionated to the point where you'll say things that piss people off. And she said, but that doesn't come into your work. And she said, and that's going to be the difference if you're willing to do that. And Justine Musk once told me, and I have quoted this quote 1,000 times because I think it's such a valuable quote. She said, if you have a bold and compelling point of view, it will piss people off. And I remember the moment that happened, that when I finally embraced those two ideas, that's when everything changed.
Yeah, but Sri, it's about your intention. You know, if you got to, that's why that is so key to swagger, is you've got to know why you're saying or doing the thing, not just because it needs to be said. Okay, well, if it needs to be said and all you're going to do is alienate people, there's no fucking point, because it's not going to land. People aren't going to embrace your truth. You're actually going to defeat the purpose of saying it. If your intention is to help people understand a different point of view, then you don't change your truth. But you got to have the smarts to be able to reframe your truth so that it lands, so that people understand that it's not just about you and not just good for you, but it's good for the greater good and for the collective. And when you learn how to do that, to make things that are important to you important to other people because they have a connection to it in some way, or they see that it also benefits them, or that they can be part of something bigger and greater, then you don't piss them off. Then you're just creative, or you're just strong-minded, or you're just whatever. You're not an asshole. And it's like one of the things that I wish that I could teach people how to do, to like with nuance. I talk about it in the book about how truth is about it's you don't change what you say, but you reframe it. And you also think about the when, the where, and the to whom you speak it. Because if it's not going to land in that moment, you're wasting your breath. And if you want to make sure it gets heard, you got to get a little strategic about it. You know, because that's what gets people into trouble, is they just puke out their truth and expect everybody to sift through it for the good chunks. It's like, no one's going to do that. It's not going to happen.
Well, I've often joked that, you know, my book, Unmistakable Why Only Is Better Than Best, could have easily been called Everybody Is Full of Shit. But to your point, that's exactly why it wasn't called that.
And I don't think it's about, you know, like sometimes the shit that comes out of our mouths is us trying out ideas. You know, they form in their heads and they're out of our mouths before we even, you know, even really think about it in process, because that's how we operate. And then it's only by the reflection of other people that we start to go, was that, you know, did I do that the right way? Was it the right thing, the right time, the right place? Or do I even believe this? And the people who I respect most in this world are able to do that, and then to sit back and hear what other people have to say and reconsider, you know, what they said or how they said it, to kind of either clarify their intention or that probably, here was my intention. That probably wasn't the best way to communicate it. I'm not backing down from what I believe in, but I understand why it didn't land the way that I had hoped it would land. If we could do that better, we would be able to have that kind of better discourse across the board, as opposed to my idea is my thought is the thought. And if you don't like it, you can fuck yourself and all the rest of it. And I, you know, people say about me that I'm like, that I'm incredibly direct. I get that a lot, but I'm also like, that I'm like cartoon violence, you know, that when I have a super strong opinion or when I get in your face, it's not like I'm going to punch you in the face. It's more like, you know, Bugs Bunny with the mallet. It's like, it doesn't really hurt, but it gets your attention, you know?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about this whole idea of ambition, because it's such an odd paradox to think that ambition is something that blocks swagger. But you say there's a big difference between being purely ambitious and being in your place of excellence. Raw ambition forces you to constantly look skyward, focusing on the next rung up the ladder instead of inward and being present in your journey toward accomplishment on your own terms. And I love that as somebody who I think, you know, had ambition, you know, to a fault, to the point where my ambition actually alienated a lot of people. I made some decisions that honestly I'm not proud of, purely out of ambition.
Yeah,
while I was in business school, like I cut friends out of projects without telling them. I mean, you know, and I lost friends for good because
that's exactly it, babe. That's exactly it. Because the reason that ambition can be a swagger blocker, and don't get me wrong, I'm all for ambition. I'm all for success and striving and taking risks and doing, you know, do you. If it comes at the cost of your authenticity, not okay, because you're going to be left alone and you may have what you perceive to be success, but trust and believe that at a certain point in your life, you're going to have a little come to Jesus with yourself and go, holy shit, what did I have to sacrifice in order to get here? Who am I and how did I become this person? So I think that when we are looking upwards to the next rung of the ladder, what we get so fixated on that by definition, we don't focus inwards enough, because if we did, we would, you know, we would check ourselves. We don't focus enough left and right to our peers and colleagues because we need them and they are part of our journey. And that's part of being professional and respectful of other people and being part of the greater good. And we sure as hell do not focus on our followers. You know, for all those people who are listening who are aspiring to be leaders, you cannot be a leader without followers. And followers have a choice. Just because you are a people manager or you have a title does not mean you will have followers. And if you do not focus on your followers and if you're not in service of their growth and their journey, you do not deserve the mantle of leader. And so if your swagger, if your swagger is coming, if it's at the expense, or your authenticity is coming at the expense of your ambition, then that is not about swagger. So being in your place of excellence is saying, I want to do a really great job. I want to learn. I want to do the best that I can, not just for myself, but for everyone who is connected to the work that I do. And I want to help lift the people around me. And when you do that, you don't have to climb, because people will lift you. That's the beautiful thing. That's what people forget, is that people will lift you. Because if you're a natural leader, then when leadership roles are open, yeah, sure, you go for it. Absolutely. And everybody else is going to endorse you for that. You're going to have so many people going, oh yeah, you know, Srini's like, you got to, he's the best. He's, you know, he's got our backs. He's amazing. We trust him, all the rest of it. And yes, you're going to have to adjust to new status as you move up the ladder, but that's the least of your problems, you know? But yeah. So I think that it can be a really slippery slope, which is why you got to watch yourself with ambition.
Yeah. So one other sort of follow-up to this whole idea of ambition, when you see things like, you know, the way that our politicians behave in the United States, you know, the way our startup, CEO founders behave when they've, you know, achieved like billion-dollar valuations, do you think that there's a danger of pushing ambition and self-interest to the point of diminishing return? And how do you recognize that before it happens?
Listen, you know, I've always said that, you know, that power absolutely corrupts absolutely. I mean, you can't, it is the very, very rare individual who remains uncorrupted in some way, shape, or form as a result of having massive power. Because I think we disconnect from reality at a certain point. When you forget what it means to be and feel like someone who is deep in the struggle, that's when everything is lost. And if you can't stay connected to that, you lose your motherfucking mind. You lose your motherfucking mind. And I watch people in power and I shake my head and go, what, like, have they really forgotten what it felt like and what it looked like to be in a place of wanting or in a place of not having or in a place of struggle? And I think it's really, really, really hard to hold on to it. I think the amount of money that people are allowed to collect is an obscenity. My husband and I talk about this all the time, that there should be a cap as to how much money one individual can have. And beyond that, the question is, what do you do with the remainder? Because that's the true test of who you are. You know, like, yeah, to keep your $100 million. Because when are you ever going to be able to spend that? But after that $100 million, it is time to share it with the world. And what kind of things do you want to share it with? How do you manage those projects? What do you do? Like, I look at Bill Gates, what he did, you know, or what he continues to do for the latter part of his career. And you go, that's what I'm talking about. You get to a point where you go, okay, I'm richer than God. What do I do now? Okay, I'm going to set up really smart foundations where people have to take responsibility for their returns. So it's not just charity after charity after charity. But I'm going to set all these things up for success so that people who do have that intention to change the world are going to have that leg up to do that. And I'm going to support them in that. So I, you know, people often say to me, so what celebrities, you know, what public figures do you think have swagger? And I go, how the hell would I know? Because for the most part, what we're seeing of them is completely curated. And based on not the stuff that they say on social media or they say on news or in interviews, but based on their actions in terms of what kind of contributors they are to the greater good, I would say almost none, like almost none, because they lose their minds in the process. You know, that's what happens.
Yeah.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at UH1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Well, let's talk about this whole idea of insecurity. You say insecurity is rarely about the challenge we're about to take on. It's the history of self-doubt that's the killer. So how do you resolve that history? I mean, we can't rewrite history. Whatever's happened to us has happened to us. You know, mm-hmm. you might have been told by your parents you weren't smart. You might have been told by some kid in the school you're an idiot, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You can't change that. So mm-hmm. with that in mind, how do we actually deal with this history of self-doubt so that we can resolve insecurity?
I'm going to be glib with this one and say we are not our history. We are the stories we tell ourselves. And you'll find that, you know, when you've ever been around someone or even for yourself, where you talk to your parents about some of the things that wounded you as a child, you know, you say, you know, mom, when you said this to me back in the day, or remember this situation that happened, and your very selective memory, because we can only store so many memories from our lives. And it's usually the ones that are super amazing or super painful. That tends to be what we have the capacity for, right? And so you revisit one of those situations and say, I remember when you told me blah, blah, blah. And then your parents go, what? That's like either that barely happened, or they tell you the context of it, or they tell you what came before or came after and reframe it for you. And you go, what? I always took it as X, or I just remember the Y, or I whatever. And again, you're selectively choosing the pieces of those stories that you have chosen to take on. You've chosen to take them on, and they continue to be the narrative that plays out in your head. You know, like I was told, so a perfect example is, you know, I had amazing parents. My parents supported me 100%. However, I was a really difficult kid. I was completely wild. I did not follow the rules. I had big issues with authority. I was super precocious. I was, you know, I would act out a lot. I was hyper, all of those things. And so my mother would often say things to me, in, you know, trying to help me, like, you know, Leslie, you're so incredibly creative. If only you could just focus a little bit more. You know, Leslie, you're so passionate. If only you could like pick your moments. Leslie, you're so, you know, you're so this, if only. And what happened was it didn't take long for me to stop hearing the first part of that and to only hear the second part of that. I became a caveat, if only, if only. And that stayed with me for years and years and years. And I believed that I was somehow not good enough, that there was some, that I was waiting for the other shoe to drop, you know, with people, that they would accept me on the surface, but really they were thinking I was too much, too big, too loud, too whatever. And I wore that, and it made me very, very angry and very frustrated for a lot of years, until I realized, wait a second, that may have been true of someone's perspective at a certain point in time, but that is still their perspective and their opinion. And if I wear it, then it's mine. And it's the equivalent of, you know, going into the fucking airport, going up to the baggage carousel, dragging somebody else's baggage off the carousel, dragging it down the causeway, taking it home, unpacking it, and putting someone else's dirty underwear on your head and strutting around in it. Like, we would never do that, but we pick up other people's baggage like it's fucking candy, and we wear it. We eat it up, and we let it take root in us as truth. As opposed to saying, wait a second, in the past, I was told that I was X, but today people tell me that I'm Y. And yeah, I couldn't be where I am and do what I do today without having been the sort of, a collective of my history. But I can choose the damage that I continue to wear, or I can choose to recontextualize it and embrace who I am right now, in my journey. So I just stopped hearing that in my head. And you can't, like, your psyche's going to talk to you. It's going to say something. The key is not to just put your fingers in your ears and sing and go, la, 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 not listening to negative voices in head. You have to literally record over them. You have to replace them with something that's going to play just like those negative tapes did and when they did. So the same way that in a situation, the negative tape is going to go, you're not good enough and you suck and you don't have what it takes. If we can record over those tapes, the same trigger is going to go, you got this, baby. You know, you got the chops. Get on it. You know, you're going to be fine. You're not going to die. And you can do that, but you have to almost like exercise the demons. You have to get them out instead of trying to suppress them or hide from them or be mad at them. You have to say, come on out and play, inner saboteur. You know, let's get you out on paper. It's an exercise that I do with people. I get them to write themselves a letter from their inner saboteur. And I go nuts, like get evil, dirty with yourself, because we accept so much more shit from ourselves than we would ever accept from somebody else. Like if somebody came in and said to me some of the shit that plays in my head, I would punch them in the face. I would lay them out. And you know I can. I would lay them out. And yet I choose to allow that. I choose to allow my own insecurity to speak to me in that way. So I get people to write a letter from the inner saboteur. And once it's out on paper, and it's a totally emotional exercise because I want every dark and shitty thought that you have about yourself to come out on paper. And often when I'm coaching people, I'll read it back to them, which is really difficult for them because now it's somebody else's voice saying the things that are their worst fears, their worst beliefs, you know? And then once we're done, I go, okay, so like any good lawyer, I want you to write a rebuttal to this letter, but I want you to use facts and not supposition. So I want you to sift through your life to date and find concrete facts, proof to dispute these points of insecurity. Okay. So it's not just like, don't be mean to me. I'm a nice person. And you know, I just want to be loved. I'm going to talk about, you say you're unlovable. And when in fact you have a partner who loves you, you have friends who have known you and loved you for the past 25 years. You have those are facts. Those are indisputable, right? So I get them to do that just for like line by line by line. And then I have them sort of compress that down to distill it down into what I call the swagger mantra. You know, find the highlights of that. I'm a blah, 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 blah person, or I'm a person who has accomplished blah, blah, blah. And I deserve all the good things because, and no one can take it away from me because, however you want to frame it. But it's that distillation so that when that negative voice comes a chirping, you go, ah, ah, you put your hand up immediately. You don't even let it start. And you go, let me tell you something. You trot out your swagger mantra. And if you need more, you start going through that resume of awesome. That is all of the things that are the proof. And slowly but surely, like in everything with your brain, you have to do it through repetition. You have to believe it. And it starts to shift that balance. So now the voice that in your head goes, actually, I'm a beautiful, lovable human who's got a ton of passion, who is committed to doing great things in this world. So fuck you, inner voice. You know, that's what happens. It's work. It takes work, you know? But yeah. I find so many people that I work with get into the whole victims thing. Well, you know, the voice always comes and I can't. I'm like, well, if you're not going to fight it, then you're not going to win. You know, you got to be in the game to win.
Yeah. It reminds me of something, a boss, one of the many bosses who fired me told me, he said, you're not the type of person who's interested in controlling your own destiny. And it's funny because, you know, I owe him a huge debt of gratitude for telling me that.
Because that's pretty insightful. It's pretty insightful from a boss.
And you know what I said? I was like, you're right. I'm not interested in controlling my own destiny in the context that you think I should control it in.
Fair.
Working at the same company for 20 years. I'm like, you know, you don't do what I've done if you lack motivation.
Yeah, no. And that's not controlling your own destiny. that's you know, working for the same company for 20 years is creating your own illusion of security. That's what you're doing. It's the illusion of security. That's it. And it's an illusion. Right? Yeah. You know, and listen, some people make that choice, all good, no shade to that. But I remind people over and over again when they, you know, again, when I work with them and they say, I'm not happy in this or I feel trapped. And I go, dude, the security that you think you don't want to give up is an absolute illusion anyway, because they will fire your ass as soon as it's convenient to them. And if you have put all your eggs in that basket simply for security, you're going to end up very, very, very disillusioned and disappointed. So if you want to be there and you want to do your thing, great, all in. But if there's things about it that you don't want, that don't fit you or don't fit you now and did fit you 10 years ago, you got to step. You got to take your own life in your hands and understand that there are other options for you in this world.
Okay, so in the interest of time, I want to cover pain and fear, and then I want to get into the things that drive swagger. So let's talk specifically about pain and fear, because I feel like so many people are terrified to do whatever this thing they say they want to do is. I mean, I hear it over and over again, whether it's, you know, with creative work, whether it's starting a business, whether it's, you know, quitting a job or something. And you say that fear is where confidence goes to die a horrible death. Mm-hmm. How do you prevent that from happening?
The thing that I love talking about when I talk about fear is the neuroscience of it. And you as a hardcore creative, you get this, that you know, according to the brain, that which has been tested and proven equals good, right? We have a default system in the brain that says, you know, what I know, what I have context for makes me feel safe because I know that I'm not going to die. That is what the brain is designed to do for us in terms of the primal brain, the reptilian brain. And any time that reptilian brain is challenged, our context is challenged, our experience is challenged, we have this process that triggers in the brain. So we have that which has not been tested and proven, which equals bad, scary, never done it, don't know what the outcome's going to be. And the reptilian brain takes over. It triggers the amygdala. The amygdala produces cortisol in the brain. Cortisol floods the brain, which then causes the limbic and the neocortex, which are the really sentient parts of the brain, causes them to shut down because we don't need those parts right now, according to the brain. It's run, kill it, or freeze. Those are the only options available to us. So now we lose the ability to think clearly. Our brains are flooded with cortisol, which then says to the brain, I got to fight, give me the stuff. And then you get adrenaline in the body. So you get that sweaty, shaky, kind of, you know, over-amped kind of vibe. That whole paradigm is the worst thing that we can imagine because the brain cannot differentiate between, you know, a tiger is going to eat me fear and someone's going to give me a side eye in a meeting fear. Fear is fear. There aren't really levels of fear unless you know how to deal with them and quickly contextualize them. So when it comes to fear, you've got to learn how to not let that process run away to the point where the sentient parts of your brain get switched off. It's learning to be uncomfortable with discomfort. That is the key because discomfort is designed to stop us from doing shit that we don't know the outcome for. And we've learned, especially in the business world, oh my God, we have started to treat discomfort as something that it's like, oh, I don't know, that doesn't feel right to me. Well, based on your personal one person myopic, little tiny box, you know, experience, it might feel scary and uncomfortable, but that doesn't make it so for the world or for the, you know, for the opportunity or whatever it is. And so when we're dealing with fear, You gotta embrace it and see it for the bullshit biological process that it is. That is the key to dealing with fear, is to go, wait a second. What am I really afraid of happening? Or I play a game with people that I train. It's a game called And Then What? So when they talk about being afraid of a situation, I say, okay, take me through it kind of moment by moment. And they say, okay, so I don't know, I'm going to make it up. They're afraid of confronting their boss about something. Okay. So what's going to happen? Well, I go into the room. Okay, great. I sit down. Okay. And then what? I broach the subject by saying X. Okay. And then what? And I get them to tell it to me moment by moment. And then they get to the moment of the thing that they think is going to be cataclysmic. I go, great. And then what? And they keep talking. And as they play this scenario out in their heads, almost inevitably, the end of the story is, and then I'm homeless on the street. I go, okie dokie, great. Okay, we've talked about the entire situation. Now, can you pinpoint at which this story ceased to be realistic in your mind? And at the worst, the realistic point is, and then I have to mend fences, or and then my relationship with my boss has changed forever. Or, you know, and at the worst, it's, and then the boss sort of questions me and gives me the side eye and the conversation turns or they whatever. And I go, okay, so can we not contextualize the fear to that then? If we're going to deal, let's deal with that. So now let's have a plan for that. So let's go send a scenario plan. We think one of three things might happen out of this. Let's scenario plan for it so that we're taking the unknown out of it. And now we don't experience that same level. Yeah, we'll get a little bit of a heart pound, but we're not going to deal with this overblown, you know, imagination of what, you know, of the us ending up homeless on the street. You know, every career I've had, I was uniquely unqualified for, like uniquely unqualified for.
You and me both.
You know, but I got an opportunity, or I stepped into an opportunity, and I was totally open about the fact that I was uniquely unqualified. But what I do is I'm a big proponent of like transferable skills. So I would always tell people all the shit that I'd done in my life that was applicable to this in really like freaking amazingly unique ways that nobody else could bring to the party. And I would make it so irresistible that they go, well, let's try it. Okay, sounds good. You know, what do we got to lose? And then I would just learn how to do stuff. Because again, I would say, what's the worst thing that could happen? Like, really, what's the worst thing that can happen? And people do not ask and answer that question for themselves enough. So that's how I deal with fear. Pain, on the other hand, the thing with pain is that it's scar tissue, right? It's proof. And it's hard to argue with proof. But again, we can contextualize it because pain is the voice that says, oh, I tried that once. That did not go well. Hurt like a motherfucker. Did not go well. I am never doing that again. Because we as humans are conditioned to move away from pain and towards pleasure, right? And pleasure lies in the known. So we go back to that time and time again. And when it comes to pain, if we experience something 30, 40, 50 years ago that brought us pain, today we will still be afraid to revisit it, even though 95% of the context has changed. That's how powerful pain is. So the key, again, when people talk about those scarring experiences that make them not want to take those risks and do those things, I say, let's talk about it. Let's talk about it and put it into perspective. You know, like even to say, so if you were in that situation now today, what would you do? And people go, oh, I would do X, Y, and Z. I say, okay, so then you don't have to worry about it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. So that is memory. It is not something that the scar tissue is there, but you don't have to face that pain again. That's been done, kind of thing. So, but of course, this, you know, when, if you imagine those swagger blockers as being kind of concentric circles and the real you is trapped on the inside, pain is the one that is closest to you. It's the first ring. Because if you're not prepared to face down that pain, forget it. You're not going to get the benefits of swagger because you're going to have to push through the memories of the things that have happened in the past that have made you withdraw. It's catch 22. You know, the reason that you're stuck now is because you've experienced some painful shit in your life that conditioned you to believe that you weren't good enough and that you were better tucked away, you know, hidden. Yeah. So that's the first thing you're going to have to deal with.
Wow. So we talked about the blockers. Let's get into the drivers. I mean, I think you've kind of, you know, alluded to them throughout our conversation. Mm-hmm. So on the section on truth, you said that truth is the number one driver of our swagger because it has the power to carry our authenticity out into the fresh air. Speaking your truth isn't a license to run around spewing your opinions or judgments on others either. It's more an antidote to feeling unheard, misunderstood, or suppressed in some way. If swagger is the authentic manifestation of who you really are, then speaking your truth must be in your toolkit if you want to be successful. So what are the components of that toolkit? Because you alluded to sort of when, where, and intention earlier.
Yeah, I think when what we want to let go of is all of those moments in our lives where we say, I wish I would have said, or why didn't I say, or why did I say that when that's not what I was feeling? Right? Imagine walking around being unburdened by that. So, you know, a lot of us really don't have a lot of experience in speaking our truth. I meet so many people who were raised in a household where no one was interested in their truth. They weren't taken seriously, even as children. They were told to not say certain things that, you know, in the worst case, you know, that children are, you know, meant to be seen, you know, and not heard. How many people I've worked with who come from cultures where, for example, being female or being dark skinned was a crime in their own homes, their own community.
You're speaking to an Indian person.
Right, yeah. Right. And so all of those things, all of that truth has become so muzzled and muffled that they don't even know how to do it anymore. So I talk about practicing speaking your truth, you know, learning how it feels in your brain, in your mouth. What does your heart feel like? Because you can't just go from zero to like, you know, brutal honesty kind of thing. But as I said, that there are you know, checks and balances in that truth thing. First of all, is if it's just for your own benefit, is probably not going to fly. You know, it's probably not going to fly. If, you know, any truth that you could hope to speak has to somehow be reframable as being good for the other, for the collective, or for the greater good. Even if it's super duper good for you. You know, if you feel like your boss is being an asshole, or if something's not right, it means that because of the way that they're interacting with you, they're not getting the best out of you. And that's not good for them. That's not good for the collective. So if you go in, if you can have that conversation and go, you know, I don't like the way you manage me. And I think that you're, you know, you're disrespectful and you're all of these things. And I list out all, like I criticize this person to high hell and all the rest of it. They're just going to shut down. And my truth is going to just, you know, die a horrible death. But if I go in and say, hey, listen, I know that what you're trying to do is to build a team that's accomplishing X. I know you have goals. I know what, you know, what you've invested all of your time and energy in it. And I know that my ability to bring 100% to the table is going to be a benefit to that. Am I right? And the person's going to go, yeah, because that's fact. You go, okay. So I feel like as a result of some of our communication and some of the things that I'm experiencing, I'm not able to bring my 100% to the table. Are you open to talking about some of the ways that I feel like I could bring more of who I am to the table? Are you open to that? Now, if that person truly is in service of their greater good and all the rest of it, they're going to be open to them. If they're not, you are wasting your breath. There is no point in having the rest of the conversation because they don't want to hear it. So I'm not going to waste my truth on people who don't have the capacity or the willingness to hear it. It's a waste of time, right? Not, you know, I will find other ways to do it, which leads me to think about reframing, but also think about, is right now in this moment the best time for my truth to land? Sometimes you got to just shut it, hold your fucking tongue. You know, you might want to say it in the moment, but it's not going to serve your message. It can also be, is this situation something that you know, that needs my truth right now? Or am I better served to wait until after it happens and then go around and talk to one person directly so that I don't inadvertently call them out or do something, you know, in that situation that's going to stop my truth from landing? So I always say it's when, where, and to whom you speak it. Because the goal is to have it land. And then we have intention, right? The why. Because if the reason you're speaking your truth is to big yourself up and make somebody else smaller, it's not going to go well for you. I don't care how true it is. It's not going to go well. If your goal is to, you know, take something away from somebody to have more for yourself, it's not going to go well. If it's to get back at somebody, to pay them back, but it's not going to go well. All those things, you got to check your intention. You got to check yourself, because that truly is to me, it's the mark of someone who really has swagger. When you say, I understand why I'm doing what I'm doing, which is part of what gives me the courage to be everything that I am, because I understand what I'm in service of here. And it's not just my own ego. It's not just my own ambition. It's not just my own, you know, my own point of view. It's because I'm trying to contribute meaningfully to something beyond myself. And the last thing is self-belief. Right? You got to believe that you're worthy of speaking it, and that the world deserves to say it, and that you are the right person to speak in, and then no one can take that away from you. So those are your swagger drivers.
Okay. So just a few more questions. I had to ask you about boxing, because I remember reading that thinking, okay, wait a minute. Like, that's kind of cool. What in the world made you get into boxing of all things?
I've always been a big boxing fan. I think it's incredible. I you know, and that's before I even really knew a lot about it, but I just find it to be, it's playing chess with your body. It's just an incredibly, incredibly intellectual pursuit, which most people do not think of it that way, but that's why they call it the sweet science. And when you understand it, you have a whole nother level of respect for it. I also love the attitudes of boxers and what makes somebody really successful in the ring and all the different styles and all the rest of it. So when I was 48, I was like, okay, I've waited too long to do this. Like, I gotta do it. If I don't do it now, I'll physically I won't be able to do it. So I found a trainer, this incredible man who was one of my closest and dearest friends, a guy named Virgil Barrow. And he started to train me. And when I was 51, I fought in my first sanctioned amateur bout. a black tie event wow. in front of 900 people in order to raise money for cancer research. I raised 30 grand for cancer research, and I fought my first sanctioned amateur bout. I have never learned more about myself and about, you know, myself and so like so much more beyond myself than I have from boxing. I've you know, just developed this incredible awe for what it, you know, because people think that it's violent. And when you actually train and you fight, you learn it's like boxing people are the best people in the world. Because in order for you to practice what you do and learn how to be better at what you do, they have to offer them their own bodies up for you to practice on. So someone's got to be willing to get hit in the face in pursuit of your growth and your development. If there is no greater, there's no greater gift that you could give someone in the world, you know, than to say, yeah, try, you know, come try and pop me, because that's a mark of you're getting better at what you do, you know? And so there were all of these beautiful things. We as boxers support each other massively. We spar with each other. They're the most supportive and loving people. My boxing people are the most real people on the planet. And, I just find that it has taught me just what my body can do, which is amazing. I've pushed myself further than I could ever have imagined, you know, doing that. It's the most like physically grueling sport in the world. Like when you're training for a fight and you're doing, you know, to train, you're going like 13 rounds on the bag, like 13 3-minute rounds on the bag, because you know you're going to fight three. But you will never know what it's like to fight three rounds until you're actually fighting three rounds, because the amount of adrenaline that pumps through your body exhausts you. And so even though you go 13 rounds on the bag, or you spar for 5 or 6 rounds or 8 rounds, it when you actually fight and the crowd is screaming and yelling and you're in that and you know you want to win, it is a whole different ballgame. So I've been boxing now for almost 10 years or so. And I just love it with a passion, with a passion. Best sport ever. And in this life, Sri, in this life, everyone should know what it feels like to take a solid head-snapping punch to the face and know that they're just fine after it.
Amazing. Well, you know what? I know that just from having this conversation with you, I think our listeners are going to want to hear a lot more from you and probably have a lot of questions. And I wanted to see if you'd be up for participating in a after show that we do on something called Airspaces, where basically you can asynchronously communicate with our listeners. They will be able to submit questions and you can actually record answers for them. If you're up for it, we would love to have
God,
you participate.
Oh my God, yes! Absolutely, cool. 1,000%. All in.
Okay, awesome. So anybody listening to this, that will actually be at unmistakablecreative.com/participate. I know that some of you participated in it for the cult series, but we wanted to make sure that you understood that this was not an ad for a product. So I figured we'd actually mention it on air. Leslie, this is why we need to do this, because I feel like literally you and I could talk for 5 hours. And in the interest of time, I want to finish with my final question. And that is, what is it that you think makes somebody or something unmistakable?
I think when you embrace everything that you have and everything that you are, all of the messy, flawed, imperfect, unshiny, you know, visceral shit about yourself, then your uniqueness becomes absolutely unmistakable. I know without a shadow of a doubt, there is only one Leslie M in the world. And I am so good with that. And I'm going to remind people that there is only one Leslie M in the world every day that I live. And when you meet me, you know it. And that's because I do just that. I'm not afraid of my grunge and my goodness and my mess and all of that stuff. And I'm not afraid to embrace it, and I'm not afraid to share it with other people. So I think that's what makes you unmistakable.
Amazing. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time to join us and share your story and your wisdom and insights with our listeners. I have to say you're probably my favorite guest this year so far.
Oh, I love you too so much. We are friends now. For people listening, this was a friendship happening before your ears. That's what was happening here. We were watching it just happen and then get cemented over time. So this is the beginning. Absolutely. You can all say that you listened to the beginning of Leslie and Srini's friendship.
Amazing. Where can people find out more about you, your work, your book, and everything that you're up to?
You can check me out at lesliem.com. That's LESLIEHM.com. You can check out the book. It's swaggerthebook.com. It's available on all the platforms and all the things. So any good bookseller. And I love playing on social, as you know. I confess that I take what I do incredibly seriously, but I don't take myself that seriously. So I try and have a lot of fun. You can find me at Leslie M Speaks on Instagram, at Leslie M on LinkedIn, at Leslie M Speaks on Facebook, at Leslie M on Twitter. And listen, I am the most accessible person in the world. So if anybody's listening and they have a question, they want to know something, just reach out. I'm right here. Happy to talk anytime.
Awesome. And for everybody listening, we will wrap the show with that.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Unmistakable Creative Podcast. While you were listening, were there any moments you found fascinating, inspiring, instructive, maybe even heartwarming? Can you think of anyone, a friend or a family member who would appreciate this moment? If so, take a second and share today's episode with that one person, because good ideas and messages are meant to be shared.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Spin your passion into a business with Shopify and break sales records with the world's best converting checkout. Let's hear that one more time. The world's best converting checkout. Shopify's legendary checkout makes it easier for customers to shop on your website, across social media, and everywhere in between. Now that's music to your ears. Any way you spin it, you can be a smash hit with Shopify. Start your dollar a month trial today at shopify.com/records.
Have you ever felt a twinge of worry about AI taking over your job or diluting your creativity? Well, what if you could turn that fear into creative fuel? We've just published an amazing new ebook called The 4 Keys to Success in an AI World, and this is more than just a guide. It's a deep exploration into the human skills that AI can't touch, the skills that are essential for standing out and thriving no matter how much technology evolves. We're talking about real differentiators here like creativity, emotional intelligence, critical thinking, and much more. Inside, you'll find actionable insights and strategies to develop these skills, whether you're a creative person, a business person, or just simply someone who loves personal development. This isn't a story about tech taking over. It's a story of human creativity thriving alongside AI. Picture this: AI as your creative co-pilot, not just as a tool, but a collaborator that enhances your unique human skills. The 4 Keys ebook will show you exactly how to do that and view AI in a new way that empowers you instead of overshadows you. Transform your creative potential today. Head over to unmistakablecreative.com/4keys. Use the number 4, K-E-Y-S. That's unmistakablecreative.com/4keys, and download your free copy.